is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis, Russia in the world. Cuba, 60 years ago, the Cuban Missile Crisis. And now I welcome Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, just back from Cuba. This is a fresh landscape since the departure of the Castro brothers from leadership. It is now in the hands of what appears to be a collection of individuals who are sustaining the Cuban economy with miracles, because there's worldwide food insecurity, there's worldwide inflation, the energy picture is moving for developed nations such as Western Europe, so why not for developing nations such as Cuba and the rest of the Caribbean? And Russia has a hand, a very strong hand, in the South America and Caribbean and Central America. If you don't notice, the Managua capital of Nicaragua, the Havana capital of Cuba, and the Caracas capital of Venezuela are all sympathetic or welcoming to Russian envoys. Katrina, a very good evening to you. A small piece of the story is Cuba. 60 years later, do you see evidence that Cuba is prospering, is failing, given the worldwide crisis now because of energy and food? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I was in Cuba for less than a week, so I'm hesitant to say too much, but I will begin with what I what we saw yesterday was interesting, John. Two elections in the world, not in our country, but one in Hungary, where Viktor Orban cemented his reign. The other in Colombia, in Latin America, where a leftist is likely to come to power. And I mention that because one thing one hears in Cuba is that, with few exceptions, left-leaning governments, and I'm not even talking Venezuela, across Latin America, including notably Mexico, have very normal relations with Cuba and disagree with the U.S. attempt ongoing for many years to isolate the island. And in fact, one thing that struck me was how important Obama's visit and the normalization process that began in 2017 was for the island, but that it's been stalled since that time because of Trump sanctions and Biden sanctions. And the visit reveal, as you said, new post-Castro, post-pandemic. The pandemic has hit Cuba very hard. And in zigs and zags, much bolder attempts than in any previous time to build a market socialist private sector. I know that's a big word, but the private sector in Cuba, partly because of protests last year in the streets of Matanzas in July 11th, partly because the economy, state economy, is really bankrupt. There's no tourism. There's no exports. Soviet subsidies ended in 1990. Venezuela is not subsidizing now. So it's an economy that is more privately oriented. We stayed due to partly U.S. sanctions in something called Casa Particulares. These are private bed and breakfasts, which Cubans with others can invest in and advertise for. We were not permitted to stay in state hotels due to the U.S. sanctions. I will end by saying what we see around the world in various countries is happening in Cuba. So many are leaving, especially the young. Lack of opportunity. Cuba having opened a transit point to Nicaragua without a visa, so people are paying to fly to Nicaragua and then make their way to Mexico to the border. So that's very, you know, when a country begins to see mass migration, it's a sign of the health of the country, but there are those staying and committed to the country, many.
Russia, in the news, tragically. We have announcements in these last days, in those last hours, by the Prime Minister of Great Britain, the President of France, the President of the United States, to open an investigation in war crimes in Ukraine. The conduct of the Russian military is at question, but the war continues, and Russia has been examined very closely and found wanting by a variety of nations around the world. The reason I mention this is because Russia has been linked to Cuba for 60 years. Did you see a Russian presence? Is Russia a burden or a help to Cuba?
So let me say two and a half things. One, we visited the Cuban Missile Crisis Park, where they have the planes. They even have like a tactical nuclear plane. That is about as close, John, as I think this country has come to nuclear war. If there had not been back-channel diplomacy between Kennedy and Soviet leader Khrushchev, Miami would not exist. That required Turkey, removal of U.S. missiles from Turkey, back-channel, not written, quiet. Russia is known primarily in Cuba today, especially among a younger generation, for contributing to what's called, quote, the special period. It really was a crisis of enormous magnitude where 85% of the Cuban economy was subsidized by the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union ended, those subsidies ended, and the country went into a spiral downwards, Cuba, of malnutrition, of blackouts, and of protest. There's a famous protest in 1994 where Fidel came to the Malecón, the beautiful waterfront walking space, and spoke to the crowds and reminded them of the power of the Cuban Revolution. The country is not in a special period now, but it is about as close as one could be. There is no Fidel. And I say that with, you know, neutrality. There's very little revolutionary fervor left in a country 60 years from the revolution, or 62 years, 59, the revolution. So there's a pragmatism that Raul, the brother of Fidel, who is still alive, no longer leader of the party, that is a man named Diaz-Canal, but there's a pragmatism to letting in more, as I said, private sector. What they need is foreign investment. There are many, I think, who would be prepared, solar power, et cetera, but the sanctions do not permit the United States to participate in that. And it's a tough, tough period. They're rest of bread lines. They're rationing. And then there's a private sector, which those who've traveled to countries where there's a devaluation of the pesos and a privileging of the dollar-euro economy understand that can be risky. So the blockade is, it's legislated. It's Helms-Burton, so you can't do an executive action. But it seems folly when you're there 60 years later, this small country, no longer really ideologically bold.
We're told we're told there's a brain drain. Did you see evidence of it? Did anyone
Oh yeah.
Speak
of it? Everyone we spoke with, we met with young entrepreneurs the first day who are committed to staying in Cuba. One of them, interestingly, a young woman who had found success in the crisis of pandemic. She had a delivery service. And we were in the hotel one night, and this guy who looks like he's in Brooklyn bikes up, delivers a pizza to the front desk. But many of them are committed to staying, but many more, including our guide, who works for the State Tourism Association, told us she was leaving. She's the eighth guide the nation has had on our trips, which we do to make funds for our journalism. She's the eighth guide to have left. So there is real drain, and it's expensive. Someone's making money off flights to Nicaragua, Venezuela Air or some airline, not Cuban. But they put the money together, their families help them, and they find opportunity. And but then we met with a very interesting group, Latiza Collective. These were intellectuals who are not in the party.
We have 30 seconds, Katrina.
Who are part of a future in Cuba. They want to stay committed. They're working in local communities, municipalities, and they are engaged. So it's a very complicated scene.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, just back from Cuba. The Cuba that was linked to the Soviet Union 60 years ago is still a Cuba that does not reject the relationship with the wider world, except the United States. That is forbidden. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.